I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting are also available from the City of Melbourne's website. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 5 reports from management, 4 items of general business. We've received an apology from Councillor Oak. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a council to move a resolution adopting the minutes of Open Meeting 58 held on Tuesday the 12th of May 2015? Councillor Wood, seconded Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal, Final Draft Master Plan, a request to speak from Catherine Underhill on behalf of the Dairy Hall Traders, and an item of correspondence from Catherine on behalf of the Dairy Hall Traders. Is anybody else here who would like to speak to us tonight? Could you tell us your name, please? And in relation to which item, Jenny? Thank you. And sorry, who else was there? Thank you very much. I advise submitters. I'm sorry, yes. Thanks, Heather. I advise submitters that you are invited to address the committee at the time the agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee. We adhere to the 3-minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind us, beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, and then again at the time the allocation to you has finished. In accordance with the Council resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the end and the beginning of each meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. This is not the time to make submissions, particularly on agenda items of this evening's business. Is there anybody who would like to ask us a question? In that case, could I call on Councillor Foster to assume the role of Chair in relation to the People City portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's 2 reports from management for consideration. Agenda item 6.1, Council Plan Actions 14.3 and 14.4, Cultural Diversity Statement and the Refugees Welcome Zone Action Plan. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? In that case, could I just ask that be scrolled down? Thank you. I'll move the motion on the screen that is in blue. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Leavitt. There were 2 significant commitments that this council undertook as part of the council plan 2014-15, and these were to firstly review the Refugee Welcome Zone Declaration and secondly to renew the multicultural policy or draft a cultural diversity statement containing an acknowledgement and recognition of the contribution of refugees and asylum seekers here in Melbourne. And this report tonight presents our first cultural diversity statement. And this statement reaffirms our reputation as a great and successful multicultural city. The statement also recognises and acknowledges the contribution of that refugees and asylum seekers make in our community. And the report then takes us another step by recommending the adoption of a refugee welcome zone plan. And if adopted tonight, the City of Melbourne will be one of a few leading councils across Australia who would then have a dedicated plan around the inclusion of refugee and asylum seeker communities in their municipality. And refugees and asylum seekers are valuable members of our community. They bring with them resilience, skills, knowledge and expertise to rebuild their lives. They deserve our support and they deserve to be welcomed here. The City of Melbourne has been commended by the Refugee Council of Australia and other key stakeholders in the development of this plan for our community, for our commitment in this area. And we should remain committed to helping all members of our community, particularly the most vulnerable. The cultural diversity statement and associated plans, such as the proposed Refugee Welcome Zone Action Plan, the Reconciliation Action Plan and the Aboriginal Heritage Action Plan that is also before us tonight, are clear, genuine and unconditional commitments that this council could take to continue to drive an agenda of social inclusion. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with everything you said there, and thank you for incorporating the suggested extra words in this motion here. Just to be clear, all we're after here is a briefing note on an annual basis so that the Council can measure success and see what success looks like, and a very short statement could also appear on the website so that we can keep a track of this. Nothing more onerous is intended by this amended motion than that, but this is a very important document. Particularly now, look, well, you know, refugees issues are always discussed in the media, but I am proud that we have got this statement before us. I'm proud that we've got a set of clear actions before us that does help some of the newly arrived citizens in the City of Melbourne and people who do need our help, and I'm very glad to see this brought before us, and with this small tweak, I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Anyone to speak against the motion? In that case, I'll just quickly acknowledge Councillor Leppett's contribution. It was actually his words that went into the further reporting in relation to the plan. So thank you for that, Councillor Leppett. On that basis, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Item 6.2, Aboriginal Heritage Action Plan 2015 to 2018. And I'll just ask that be scrolled down. Thank you. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? I'll move the item in blue. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Just briefly, it's worth mentioning how proud we are again of this item as well, being the Aboriginal in relation to Aboriginal heritage. Council endorsed its first Indigenous Heritage Action Plan for 2012-2015 in 2012. It was, and it continues to be, the first of its type for any local government in Victoria, recognising that Aboriginal sites are precious parts of the heritage for the whole of the community. It also provides Aboriginal people today with an important link to their culture and past. The Indigenous Heritage Action Plan began to formally document and provide a more systemic approach in relation to Indigenous heritage sites across the city. The plan before us tonight, the Aboriginal Heritage Action Plan, continues on from that work. It more specifically focuses on three key themes, that being conservation, developing a stronger understanding of the significance, extent and condition of Aboriginal heritage places, celebration of Melbourne as a place where people who live, work or visit can easily recognise and celebrate Melbourne as a place that was and continues to be a significant place for Aboriginal people, and of course collaboration, working with key stakeholders to ensure that Aboriginal Melbourne is conserved as well as celebrated by all of us. It is indeed a plan that is uniquely Melbourne. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I agree. This is a document that does so much more than just seek to recognise Aboriginal heritage, and with those three themes of conservation, celebration and collaboration, I think this is a very mature document. Again, another little tweak to the process here, because I think that councillors should be prompted on an annual basis to see where we're up to on these issues, and it's always good to have that public-facing document as well so that we can keep tracking this very, very important work. Can I also acknowledge the work of Councillor Oak on during the development of this new Aboriginal Heritage Action Plan? The workshop processes, I think, were robust and very, very useful. And we've ended up in a situation here working in collaboration with very important stakeholders, everyone from local Indigenous elders to, of course, Aboriginal Affairs Victoria, who is a pivotal stakeholder in this process, and we've ended up with a document that outlines how we will work with the community and stakeholders to continually develop that work. This is not a static process, and the actions in here require constant review. And I think there are some really good individual projects in here that will celebrate different types of heritage, and so I look forward to seeing this plan unroll.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Anyone to speak against the motion? Just in closing, I will always thank Councillor Leppard for his tweaks, most valuable. But also, I wanted to acknowledge the significant contribution of Councillor Watts and her work in developing this plan. It certainly shouldn't go unnoticed. It was very greatly, her input was very greatly received. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? And that's carried unanimously. I'll now call on Councillor Wood to assume the role of chair in relation to the Environment Portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Foster. There's one report from management for consideration under the Environment Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.3, Resilient Melbourne Preliminary Resilience Assessment. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. I'm happy to move the officer recommendation. I call on a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Ong. So 32 local governments, emergency services, various levels of government, and a hazard-agnostic first step in designing the principles for the resilient, what will be the Resilient Melbourne Strategy. And recognition too that our Chief Resilience Officer sits across the whole of Metro Melbourne, so not just the City of Melbourne. And a very wide remit. So I think the hazard agnostic approach is a good one to take. I'd also like to acknowledge Jeff Lawler, who I believe has opened quite a few doors for our Chief Resilience Officer into various levels of government, which has been a huge help to Toby. So I commend this. I commend the Lord Mayor's influence in getting a whole heap of councils in the room, which was very valuable to kick this off. And also the work of other City of Melbourne officers in supporting Toby in his important work. Councillor Ong.
I echo those words, and I also like to acknowledge that, I mean, it is a great honour that the City of Melbourne is actually hosting this role of the Chief Resilience Officer, and also it's a great honour that it's one of the first 33 countries that were selected to be part of this when there were over 372 applications for this. As Councillor Wood has said, the Lord Mayor in his leadership role have brought a lot of the other councils together with mayors and CEOs, and the work that's been done in this first stage clearly identifies at a high level a certain series of challenges for the future and for Metropolitan Melbourne, which covers over 10,000 square kilometres. And I think from this point on, with the involvement of all the various government authorities, local governments and other experts, I think we'll be heading into a phase of identifying clear actions that will protect us into the future and enable us to be prepared for the future. I think that's what's important. While we spend a lot of time thinking about what's going on today, I think this specific initiative is a crucial part of where we want the future of the larger Melbourne to be for future generations. So well done to Toby and Jeff and all other parties.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Any other speakers for the motion? Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. This is a very high-level report, which is quite appropriate for this stage, and a very comprehensive report of which we should be very proud. And as Councillor Ong said, we should look forward to how this is translated into actions. When I think about this idea of resilience in our city, you can think about, at the high end, the very serious stuff. What is the biggest killer in the City of Melbourne? And the answer is heat. You know, when you have a heat wave, then hundreds of the vulnerable and the elderly unfortunately succumb to that heat. And it's kind of the silent killer. And what we're working towards is, how can a city make itself resilient against that sort of killer? And what we're looking for are solutions that are transferable, that are scalable, that are affordable, and that are measurable. And a couple of simple, very practical things. We've already won worldwide awards for our urban forest. Plant more trees is a really good answer. Plant more trees. It cools down the centre of the city. It makes the city more livable. It makes it more sustainable. It actually makes it safer. Something else we did in concert with Vic Health, put in more water drinking fountains. You know, one of the greatest sources of clean, potable water in the world is the Melbourne Water Supply, and allow people access to that water, particularly throughout very hot summers. So while this is a very appropriate high-level framework, we haven't lost sight of what are the practical things, as I said, that sort of mantra of transferable, scalable, affordable, measurable, in order to deliver that, regardless of a city's resources or its needs, will be a very useful outcome to this study. But again, I think, as the Chair said, I'm very proud of the fact that we're one of the first of Rockefeller's resilient cities, and we should continue this very good work.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any speakers against the motion? Any other speakers for? Councillor Watts.
Yes, I'd just like to make one comment about this. Yes, I agree with everything people have said so far, but I remind everybody that there are five framing questions around this particular area as part of the focus areas, and one of the question that's uppermost in my mind, or has prominence in my mind, being chair of the Knowledge City portfolio, is how do we provide diverse local employment opportunities that support an agile workforce prepared for the jobs of the future? So when we talk about resilience, obviously we have to have all of these sustainability issues in mind, but part of the sustainability is making sure that we can all progress as far as the economy goes too.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Monk.
My only additional point is to thank the Rockefeller Foundation for this global exercise, and I think it's only with their support that we've been able to hire an excellent executive in Toby Kent, who has done quite a remarkable job, in my view, in herding together all 30 or so metropolitan councils. So obviously, as we've heard, Jeff Lawler, the Lord Mayor, and others have helped assist with that. But it's no mean feat. And frankly, I think maybe Toby Kent's next job might be to be CEO of the MAV or ALGA or some other organisation that... getting the disparate groups of local government to coordinate and talk together is no mean feat. And this is an exercise prompted by the Rockefeller Foundation, which has forced Melbourne to take leadership of it. And reading this report, and particularly the attendance levels and engagement levels we've had from other agencies and other councils across metropolitan Melbourne, is we've done a great job in achieving that engagement, which is not easy to achieve in our sector. So well done, Toby, and all others involved.
Thanks, Councillor Mayne. Any other speakers to the motion? I'll quickly touch on Councillor Mayne's cruel and unusual punishment for Toby, sending him off to MAV and ALGA. But we do thank the Rockefeller for their dollars, and also acknowledge once again that the position's entirely paid for by Rockefeller, and that global network, aside from the cash that they provide, is one of the great assets of this position, to connect with leading cities from across the world as they too tackle a lot of these challenges that all cities are facing. The City of Melbourne's got Metro Melbourne's got huge growth, climate variability. We need to work on maintaining that great social connection, the cultural diversity. Councillor Watts's points about diverse employment also build resilience and that cohesion. So we've got a lot of challenges ahead of us, but we've also got a huge amount of opportunity that presents us as well. So we've been award-winning in many of the City of Melbourne strategies, whether it's the urban forest strategy or even our approach to homelessness. Resilience really is the glue that connects all of these things together. So it's that next step that innovative and world-leading cities are making in terms of ensuring that they remain livable for many years to come. So I'm happy to commend this motion and put that to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously, and I now call on the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, to resume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the major projects portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. There is one report from management for consideration of the major projects portfolio, and that is the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Final Draft Master Plan. Could I ask Rob Adams to make a brief presentation to us on the plan?
Thank you, Lord Mayor, through you. The master plan that's included at Attachment 2 here closely resembles the draft that was released in February. It has been adjusted from the feedback that we received in the third phase of community engagement. The key findings around that were around parking, opening hours, heritage and public spaces. Market traders have consistently requested improved car parking, and while visitors agree that car parking is important, improved pedestrian amenity and safety as a way of improving their access to the market was identified as their priority. The car park will of 720 cars will be accommodated in the renewal to replace the open space car parking, and in part that is due to the strategic purchase of the Munro site. In combination with the southern site negotiated for the Victorian government, they form a strategic set of land holdings that are important to the people of Melbourne and the future of the Queen Victoria Market precinct. Public and trader feedback indicates support for extended opening hours, with parts of the market in the future offering services 7 days a week from early morning to late at night. That does not mean, however, that the existing traders are expected to cover those hours. Heritage is recognised as a key initiative, including the importance of preserving the authentic market trading experience. And improved public spaces in the precinct is also a high priority in order to meet several aims. The master plan highlights the crucial role of traders, noting that successful and prosperous traders are essential to a successful market. It contains outcome-focused priorities together with key improvements which are intended to remove ambiguity and clarify issues to be resolved. I recommend the master plan to you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Rob. Could I now call on Catherine Underhill on behalf of the Dairy Hall traders, who asked to address us in relation to this matter. Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks for the opportunity. This will largely be a repeat of my submission, but on behalf of the Dairy Hall traders, I would like to thank you for your commitment to the QVM. We welcome the idea of green space, sustainability, childcare, community space, and we welcome better toilets, traffic flow, storage, all of it. But getting there is really scary, and you will need the support and real input from traders. We need to be very careful that in a rush to renew the market, we don't forget the things that make the market work. We have a desire for order and like our ducks in a row, but sometimes that doesn't really work in a market. So why is there a takeaway next to a bratwurst shop? Why is there a remaindered food stall next to a fruit stall? I don't know, but I'm sure they're both happy that they're there. Supporting emerging businesses is a primary strategic direction. That is extremely complex. How do you do that? Especially when multi-location formulaic businesses would love to be there. Ensuring that the market remains a home to family business and micro businesses requires policy, not just luck. There is an inherent danger in trying to force change. Docklands and South Wharf show that if you build it, they might not come, and we must be careful that our change is an evolution and not a tsunami. In the lead up to the renewal, don't ignore the market. We need to gain customers before we torture them. The worst thing we could do at this point would be to halt expenditure. QVM need to start doing the smaller projects, market apps, information booths that are interactive, different methods of weather protection, just really trying things out. And sorry for this, but can we start looking at heritage colours differently and get away from those slightly diarrhea-tinged colours? I think if you look at France and their markets, you'll see some beautiful blues. I was going to talk about parking, but I'm going to skip that. Finally, I really would like to ask the Council and the Board to examine how they view the market and how they will measure its success. If you're going to measure success by increased revenue from the market, I think that the market will fail. I think you need to regard the market as something that needs to be fed and nurtured, not just something from which you gain money. You need to judge it by the variety of people who feel ownership, whether they're rich or whether they're poor, very important, whether they're immigrants, whether they're locals, tourists, whatever. You have to judge it by whether we genuinely are getting micro-businesses and family businesses starting in the market. You know, it's very hard these days to find a place where you can do something that doesn't require major input.
Catherine, thank you very much. Can I thank you not just for your oral presentation, but seriously one of the finest one-page submissions I think I've read in my time here on Council. So very well done. Thank you. Could I call on Jenny Pike, who asked to address us, please?
Hello. Well, I must commend Catherine's presentation. I think mine's going to be not quite in the same league. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, councillors, for giving us this opportunity to speak. My name is Jenny Pike, and I've been a trader at the Queen Victoria Market for 35 years and currently a member of the QVM Advisory Committee. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to the Draft Master Plan. The commitment of $250 million to the QVM is a considerable investment, and we are all seeking to achieve the best possible outcome for the QVM, the traders, the public and the City of Melbourne. The Draft Master Plan talks about the commercial viability of traders as one of its key initiatives. It is the viability of traders now that is of concern, and the renewal presents a whole new level of uncertainty. As a case study, I represent the shops on Victoria Street as part of my role in the QVMAC, and I'll give you a case study as what is happening to the traders even before the renewal. Leases are uncertain and shops are remaining empty. We have one genuine Aboriginal owned and run shop in the QVM on Victoria Street, Curry Connections. This was a thriving business selling artwork and original artefacts locally and internationally. This once thriving business was forced to shift to a much smaller premises from 155 to 145 to make way for an electrical substation. The substation was then not located in the shop taken from Curry Connections, and it became a storeroom for QVM services and later the site for an online store with no retail frontage. The lease on the prime corner shop at 87 to 89 Victoria Street was then not renewed in November last year. The tenant asked for a month-to-month lease to clear their stock, and were told that this was not possible as there was someone else coming in. This is now June, and the iconic corner shop is still vacant, with now talk of a pop-up shop selling truffles to go in there. Curry Connections applied for the shop, and they were told they would not have the capacity to pay the rent, the capacity to pay rent having been diminished by QVM's first relocation. For several years now, 155 Victoria Street has not been used as a retail premises, and now 87 Victoria Street has been empty for over 6 months. How can those businesses in between be expected to remain viable if the bookends are not being filled? Compounding the issue for the Victoria Street shops was the social kitchen, built across the full width of A and B sheds, blocking the major laneway in A shed and visibility into the sheds from Peel Street. The traders at the top of A shed were given little option but to move to make way for the social kitchen. The negative impact on the traders in A shed and the Victoria Street shop for 6 months was catastrophic, with little done to alleviate the losses of these traders in those areas. 2 weeks after the removal of the social kitchen...
Thank you. Could I now call on John Pike to make a presentation to us?
Thank you for the opportunity. My name is John Price. I've been a customer of the market for almost 30 years. I'm a lawyer in my professional life. I've run a retail hardware business in the 80s and early 90s close to the South Melbourne market, which I enjoyed immensely. And over the last 6 months, I've had many meetings with a range of traders about the proposed development, which I encourage. It has saddened me, however, on all levels, to listen to the constant us and them talk about the relationship between traders and management. I've been asked to assist a number of traders in this process, and their focus is to ensure that the redevelopment of the market is as good as possible for the benefit of all concerned. And the traders need to be proactively engaged with management in achieving this outcome. The communication with traders must not only be within each section of the market, but must also go across all sections to ensure the success of this process. This is not about criticising what has gone on before, but embracing the need for redevelopment and all working together to achieve the outcome. I've read a lot of material in the last little while, and it started in 1997 with the formation of QVMPL, and all the statements ring soundly in my ears. The 1997 statement said that QVM was formed to ensure that Queen Victoria Market continues to be seen as Australia's foremost traditional market, including ensuring its protection as an intrinsic part of the history and culture of Melbourne. The Master Plan of 2003 continued along the same lines. The vision statement said it was a place to buy and sell where family businesses provide the personal contact, quality produce and merchandise, colour and noise, which we all love, diversity and price competitiveness. The vision statement went on to say that looking to the future and maintaining and enhancing these qualities, the market must continue to be relevant to its stakeholders as a commercial and cultural resource, and that future development must ensure that the market provides the appropriate facilities for traders and shoppers to operate successfully in the context of a true market atmosphere. The 2014 business plan said the same thing. The strategic brief in February 2015 said the same thing. The draft master plan states the same sort of thing. And in April 2014, which again rang very soundly in my ears, was the report by David O'Neill, one of the world's leading market consultants, and his key messages, which are obvious for all to read, as provided by management to at least some of the traders, are endorsed wholeheartedly by the traders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Could I call on Emma Lawrence, who asked to address us, please? Thanks, Emma.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. I want to say that I'm very grateful for the work that's gone on in the master plan. I've been a shopper at the Queen Victoria Market for 30 years, and I've been in the last 4 years a trader there. I'm retired from the University of Melbourne, and when I began this little business to work with teachers, I discovered in the marketplace, if I were to wholesale, I was in a soulless world. And when I went to local markets with my Australian animal puppets, I found the world of business, small business, micro business. And I saw that from the big shopping centres, that's where innovation, small business, micro business had gone. And we can only see the evidence of that in the rise of farmers markets and craft markets all over the place, and in particular in Victoria. So then somebody said to me, why don't you bring them to the Queen Victoria Market, this little business, and I did. And ever since I've been there, I've learned and talked to so many traders to hear their stories, the history we know, and then to see these innovative little businesses, family businesses being passed on. So I know that you know those things, but I want to raise two important questions because I think they're relevant to the issues around resilience that we happen to be talking about and the threats that people feel, and secondly, to some of the decisions that I think are being made. Firstly, I do ask the question about the rezoning of the market. I note that in each incarnation of policy and law that we see that the market precinct, the words for market trading to continue stay in the legislation. But I'm concerned that I notice it's not there this time, and I ask if you've thought about that for future incarnations. Secondly, I want to point to the fact that with this commitment that I see to microbusiness, I also see that already there's an example of a very small trader, a winemaker, sulphur-free, handmade wine, been at the market for 18 years, but 2 years ago, the license for alcohol for the night market was sold to a very big wine alcohol merchant, and he was told he could no longer trade. I believe that this is something we must really point to as an example of how possibly vested interests, money, might speak, and then the words of micro business, family business, small business seem to be lost on the side. So I really want the councillors to think very carefully about this preciousness of the market. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to move the motion that is on the screen.
Sorry, Lord Mayor, do you mind if I move a slightly alternative motion?
Well, it depends. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, happy. I'm happy to move that. Or do you want to move it? I'm happy to move it. You happy to second it? Thank you. Could I thank our submitters tonight? Could I point out that I was recently shown a newspaper article and a petition to the Lord Mayor, which spoke about how the traders at the Queen Victoria Market needed storage capacity, including chill capacity, parking guarantees, better facilities, and pointed out the need for the market to open longer and have some investment in the market. That article was published 6 months after my birth in 1953. We've been talking about this for an awfully long time. And let's not forget, this project had its impetus when traders came to me to say, unless we were prepared to make an investment in the market, then the market itself may well fail. And they persuaded me of that. I make no comment on the individual cases that have been raised by submitters tonight. I think as council and the owners of the market, we are entitled to ask management for a response to those, and that can be done offline from tonight. But I think they are worth us having some answers for. I hear what people are saying about business continuity and business fairness, and I think that they are entirely reasonable points. And it is our intention to reflect that in what we are doing. I think that the important thing here, though, is to remember that change of this size is scary. It is, and particularly for those whose businesses and lives and livelihoods rest on us getting it right. This has now been 3 years of consultation and discussion to get to this point. If we don't keep moving, then we'll be back in the position of that newspaper article, I think of November of 1953. And I just don't think there's any appetite here to do it. Around the rezoning question, I can answer that to say that the rezoning of the market will actually protect the market to a far greater degree than it's protected now, and the open space beside it as well. But I think it is fair to say that the vision for the market is no longer a kind of a flat saucer without any entry to it or sense of coming across the market, as has been the case in previous decades, but to try to delineate the edge of the city where the market begins and the exact jewel of the market sitting in that part of the city. And that's what the zoning, we believe, according to the best advice to us, will do. We hear the concerns that you have, and we are determined along the way to deal with all of those. It's very important to us. We understand without traders there's no market. But in the end, we do have to get on and continue to make the steps that we are going to make. I would have thought the biggest statement of commitment the council could have made to traders was the enormous purchase at $76 million of the Munro site, to say that we are serious about doing this properly and listening to your concerns, particularly about things like car parking. I acknowledge that this is a stressful time for traders. We'll continue to work with the markets management and here on council to make sure that we get through this difficult period for traders. We're quite used to doing that. We did it, you know, over a shorter period of time, 3 years, for Emporium in Lonsdale Street. We did it over a much longer period of time for the QV development. We did it over 2 years for Swanson Street. So we're not coming at this as newcomers. We're going to have to do it over a much longer period of time for Melbourne Metro. So we do understand the problems of business continuity during times of great structural change. We will work to that. But what I haven't heard tonight is any concerns about what we have proposed in this draft master plan. Concerns about how we do it, concerns about some things that have happened in the past, concerns about bits that we want to make sure happen in the right order. But nothing to say you've got it wrong in your master plan. And I take it that is an acknowledgement that this is an iterative process of conversation and communication, and I respect that, and I commit to continuing to talk to traders and all the stakeholders to make sure that we make this city's and this council's biggest investment ever work for the Queen Victoria market and the traders in that market. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And if I can just pick up on your last point first, we are about to engage on the fourth phase of community consultation. But yes, I think the multi-phased approach to this has been managed extraordinarily well. And that is one of the reasons why we've seen such very good submissions tonight. but also it's testament to the process that's been set up from the outset to roll this consultation with traders, with visitors, with shoppers, and with the local community over those four stages, and certainly the way that's been handled through the media as well, and with your leadership as well, Lord Mayor. I think that tonight is testament to how well that has gone. I've quibbled about the processes in the past, but I think I'm very happy with where we are at the moment for the reasons I've just stated. Can I just very quickly address the changes that I've suggested here in this motion? I think that between the draft master plan and the draft final master plan that we're looking at tonight, there may have been a slight issue lost in translation. Council put those words in the previous plan, saying that the items of new mixed-use development, that the areas of new mixed-use development would be guided by the City of Melbourne Housing Strategy. That's not a motherhood statement. The Housing Strategy does have some specific actions and goals in there. Not sure yet the extent to which we can enact them all, but we may as well, in the master plan, be upfront about our intentions to do what we can at looking at those actions when they do come back to us. But this is a master plan, and as the Lord Mayor says, this doesn't necessarily outline every last matter about how we're going to get to achieving these goals, this vision. It is just the master plan. And so I think the message has been sent loud and clear tonight and throughout this process that this council and certainly the board and certainly those working so closely on this renewal project are going to have to work very closely with all of the stakeholders, particularly the traders, in managing change well and ensuring that we don't lose that very important things that we already get so right. The conclusion of Catherine, your submission talks about one of the items in the strategic directions is to create shared experiences that encourage social connections, and the market has been doing that for a very long time. That's absolutely true. We need to build on the best of what we currently do and manage the change as we go towards the items in the master plan that we want to get towards as well as we possibly can. But this isn't the final process. This is not set and forget. There'll be much, much more work to go. But for the point we're at the moment, I think that this is a good point to land. And so I definitely support the master plan in its current form.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I just want to recognise the effort of people coming tonight. Thank you. It's most interesting to me, and what I took from what some of the things that you're saying, that you don't actually have, well, you have some issues with the master plan, but a lot of the issues you raise are actually in the management. And I really agree with the Lord Mayor. I look forward to a report back from market management. This is all recorded. They will know what you have raised, and I would like a report back from them too. There are matters that you raise that worry me greatly, and I can't imagine, though, that we can do very much about some of the things you raise through the master plan. We're all in furious agreement, I think, that change has to happen, and I would like to personally stress that this is a draft and that you are, as traders at the market, very much entitled and need to get hold of your management and express some of these concerns. We aren't engaged in a hands-on way with the management of the market. You are. So there are many good aspects of this market plan. One of the written submission Ms. Underhill brought to my attention, or to our attention, there was a sentence in there that struck me as something our officers can handle for us perhaps now, or to you, is that you said, you know, who's asking for the opinions of those who no longer go to the market? I don't know how we tap into that opinion, but presumably our officers can find a way to do that, and I look forward to that too. This is a draft plan, and I'm supporting it as such.
Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you to speakers and the written submission. I think there are a lot of valid points made in Catherine's written submission. I think the key thing with this master plan as we head into phase four of the community engagement is the master plan and where it's heading is talking. Basically, it's about change management. Change management and then the project management. And I see this is under major projects. because when it comes to the crunch, it's about managing details, the details of a very complex project. It's not building something from scratch. It is building a life, a living organism, and while the trading is going on and how this change occurs in different phases. And I can understand the various issues and concerns and fears of traders. But if we look beyond that, as the Lord Mayor says, even 60-odd years ago, it's about better facilities, better services for the traders, for the customers, because if this is planned well and implemented well, it will actually attract more visitors. Because I remember years ago reading the QVM, the Queen Victoria Market, is one of the top three destinations in Victoria under the tourism rankings. It's no longer there. And I think the as the owners of this key asset within Victoria, the City of Melbourne and the management has an obligation to look at putting in the investments to bring it back to that level in the tourism map. We focus on the market. While there are other things that are talked about in there, it's not about focusing on the development potential of the southern part of Franklin Streets and all the others, because they are just the means to the end. The end is actually about the market. And I just want to stress that point, because we get dragged in many different directions when we're looking at this project. But like everyone else and the traders and the customer, we want this to be a successful. We want to be one of the best markets in the world. And I hope that the as we progress into stage four, people start to understand what is the big picture. Well, we can talk about a particular shop on a particular stall in this shade or that street. The end result and how we manage to get to the end result is the important part. And that's why I'm fully supporting of this master plan. A lot of work's gone into it. I commend management from the City of Melbourne and from the Queen Victoria Market, and also all the public who's put their inputs in. There's been thousands of inputs. This hasn't been done in a black box environment. It's been done with engagement, and I commend all of those who have put in. In the end, we have to move on.
Is there a further contributor to it? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer?
I'd just like to say, Lord Mayor, that having visited markets 2 years to the day, actually, in Rome, Barcelona and London, while change is always hard, it is always difficult, I actually witnessed and was privy to the many challenges that some of those traders faced visiting something like 13 markets. And I can only endorse this current process, and I think urge you to keep conversing with us and participating in all of our engagement processes, and keep talking about your needs and your desires, because at the end of the day we need your input, but it's not just our business, it is your business. It is critical. It's a critical factor in all of this, and we want it to succeed.
Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I actually wanted to agree with a couple of your points, and the first one was that you mentioned just recently some concerns that were put by traders that married very heavily with concerns put over 60 years ago. I think it's worth noting, though, that the market hasn't closed over those 60 years, and I think that's in no small part due to the enormous contribution and dedication of traders within the market. That is something we can't afford to lose. In any redevelopment that we do, we must be taking traders with us, so I too encourage you to keep speaking up about any concerns that get presented to you along the way. Lord Mayor also said that the second point I want to agree with is that without the traders there is no market. So I don't think it can be put any simpler or more accurately than that. Again, it goes to the idea that we must continue to foster that genuine consultation with traders, with the emphasis on genuine consultation. For me, this, whilst I do support this motion, for me this is a watching brief over the final stage of our consultation. And I eagerly await more voices coming out of the market in that final phase.
Thank you. Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, I'm really pleased that we've got to this point. I think the design with the four quarters and the market cross, the development sites, the multi-storey car park and the new open space is a really good design. It hasn't really been mentioned much during the debate. But at the end of the day, this is approving a final draft master plan, and for mine, the detail of what's in there is really visionary, really appropriate. It reflects retention of our wonderful market, but obviously doing some long overdue investment and upgrading, which will improve the amenity for traders and make it more attractive to bring in more customers. And I can assure our submitters that as Chair of Finance, there's been absolutely no discussion, I think there probably should have been, about how much is the financial return going to be. I mean, at the moment, we've been getting about $5 million a year, and no one has even had a conversation which says that should rise to seven, or that can drop to three, or we just haven't talked about it. So this is not a financially driven process in terms of we want to get a return on our investment. We want to renew and improve the market. It's long overdue, and we're not doing the level of sort of financial analysis about rate of returns that maybe a commercial organisation would do. There are other drivers, including accommodating the community's desires and obviously the traders' desires as well. So I think we've been through a very detailed process. We've got some important decisions to make, such as with car parking, can it all be accommodated on the Munro site? Do we need to do a smaller basement somewhere? Or can it all be done at Munro, or does it need to go on the other southern development site? When do we deal with our development sites? Do we aim to do it in the next 18 months before the election, or do we do a longer term process with that? So there are some very important decisions to be made along the way. And of course we must continue to consult with our traders and not to interrupt their businesses. But I think it would be a little bit disappointing if a couple of individual examples of trader situations colours our overall debate. And I do stress that we do have more than 700 traders at the Queen Victoria Market. That is a large number of traders, all of whom will have different experiences. And I've been very impressed and quite surprised that the financials that are coming in on a quarterly basis show that the QVM is actually meeting or beating budget in terms of the success and visitation. So for all the destabilisation of this massive renewal process and planning process, the business is continuing to operate well, numbers are holding up well, and that has been very resilient in terms of a time of great change and great planning. And of course we always will try and do better and keep everyone happy all of the time, but this is a difficult process, there's competing interests often, and we just have to be as transparent as possible, as sensible as possible, engage openly with everyone and try and make the best decisions based on the available information. And I think this is a really good draft master plan. I hope we can get it finished before 2026, which is what the schematic timeframe says. I'd like to see us going faster, but obviously we have to carefully plan every step of the way. And this is an important milestone tonight after a very intensive and detailed community consultation, signing off on the final draft master plan. Well done to the officers, well done to the executives and the board at QVM, and let's hope the project proceeds as it's outlined in this visionary document.
Thank you. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I think we're all speaking on this item, but we're all speaking on it because it's a hugely important one to all of us, to council, to market management, obviously to the traders as well. And I thank you for your submissions tonight. They were very eloquent and very well put, some of the best that we've had over this council term. And I do think there's so many great things about the market. My office actually overlooks the market, so I see what goes on there on a daily basis. And you know, while there's all these positive things about it, while it's much loved and while it's a huge community asset and indeed an asset for the city, there's also some really great opportunities to do some different things. Things like the urban heat island effect, the open space opportunities, better support for micro business, more diversity, you know, putting the different regions of produce from Victoria on the map to build on that appetite for farmers' markets. So I think while there's lots of great things about it, and I know that you as traders recognise the need for change, and it's how that change is managed is going to be absolutely critical. But like the Lord Mayor and Councillor Mayne and other speakers, I think the master plan is a really good one. I'm really, really excited about the potential for new green open space, and think about people grabbing their produce at the market and heading over into that green space to, you know, watch a band and eat their produce or whatever that might entail. I think the other opportunity for extended hours, not for single traders, that got a little bit lost in translation, but it's a market within a market within a market. I think the night market has been just a huge success for that space. So what we're talking about is allowing other people to come in and make that market their home. I also think the business mix around the market is something that this market redevelopment is going to enhance. We must say that the business mix around the market at the moment isn't probably the most salubrious and isn't the most diversity, and the opportunity for streetscape upgrade is also there. And then how we connect that into Victoria Street and indeed into Errol Street, where some of the traders along Victoria Street have suffered for quite a number of years. So there is a lot riding on this. I know the traders talk about this being a huge thing for you. I can assure you that this is a huge thing for Council as well. This is the biggest project that we've undertaken in our history. You need us to get it right. We want to get it right just as much as you do.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to debate? In that case, just very briefly in conclusion, two quick points. The first is to remember that this report before us tonight is about the market project, the master plan for the market project. The submitters tonight, eloquent as they were, really spoke to us about business continuity or past management decisions. And while they are very important, very crucial considerations, they're not actually a part of the master plan. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be addressed. They should, and they will be as part of that process. But nevertheless, this is about the master plan for the market project. And that leads me to the second bit, and that is that although this is stamped draft plan, in fact, we have now been doing this for 3 years, and we've got 1 month to go before we finalise this, and the next step is to move to design and document. And so unless we've got it horribly wrong over the last 3 years, I wouldn't imagine that there was major change to this master plan for the project, and that's what's important. That doesn't mean we can't address the concerns that have been raised tonight, and we will. But they are more process ones rather than the product of this market project master plan. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Could I call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of chair in relation to the finance and governance portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report for management for consideration in finance and governance. It's agenda item 6.5. It's a review of future Melbourne plan. Do we want a presentation on this, councillors? No. So I'll call on a councillor to move a motion. I'm happy. Lord Mayor will move the motion. Is there a seconder? Councillor Wood. Lord Mayor.
We don't need to reinvent the wheel, but one of the most exciting things when I came as Lord Mayor first in 2008 was that a great deal of work had been done around what we now call Future Melbourne, a quite revolutionary way of looking at organising the business of the city. That's not to say it's the organisational plan, and it's not, but although the plan is to run until 2018, I think it's reasonable to say, first of all, let's start looking at it now, but let's do it in a way that the next council are masters of their own destiny in the way that we were in 2009 in adopting Future Melbourne. So while it's appropriate for us to do this work around Future Melbourne, it's not to say to any future council, this is what the blueprint is and you must stick to it. I think it's a good balance of doing the work that we need to ahead of time, but allowing a future council to determine their own directions. The other point to make is that was an innovative process, and I don't think that we need to revisit that in its entirety, but we should remember that, it is right to look at these structures 5, 7, before the 10-year expiry window, and that's what this report does to us tonight. The other point I would make is I think it's very important that it is married extremely well to the corporate structure. So on the one hand, we have a council structure. On the other hand, we have a corporate structure. They won't of necessity be exact templates, but they should be a matrix which strengthen and complement each other, and that's what I'm looking forward to in this process.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. The previous Future Melbourne process had an excellent reference group, which I was
in part.
But it was a great process. I think I can't remember the exact number of individual wiki edits, but it was in the order of 16,000 or thereabouts. So huge engagement in the process, and it's really been a plan that's defined council and done it very well. And I think it's something that has been easily identified with in terms of breaking up the various actions that we've undertaken. I, like the Lord Mayor, see this as a process of review and sort of not throwing out all the great aspects that have worked so well, but essentially looking at how we enhance what has gone before us, but also identify some of those new challenges which have come apart, to us in the last sort of 3 or 4 years as things start to change. So I look forward to this process. You'll see the 2016, I think, like the Lord Mayor, we get that right in terms of allowing the next council to have a big say in how they accept the future Melbourne planning process. And also that too allows extensive input into the process, because I think one of the great successes of the last future Melbourne plan was indeed the amount of input that, that was actually achieved and the amount of ownership that, that resulted from that. And one of the sort of great initiatives was getting those future Melbourne reference leaders in their various fields to actually write opinion pieces that were then carried in the newspaper. So perhaps the Herald Sun might be thinking about this to run a bit of a piece on the big issues that we're facing, and that indeed generated a lot of comment as well. So I look forward to this process, and indeed the previous Future Melbourne process was a huge success.
Thanks, Councillor Wood. Any other speakers on this item? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, the other major purpose, of course, of undertaking an exercise like this, beyond just asking the community what they'd like us to do, is to involve as much of our stakeholders, as much of our residents, as much of our ratepayers as we can in those key conversations about the challenges that are facing Melbourne and where we would like to be in future. It is much more than a broad plan for the work of government. I think it has that extra angle as well. But when you think about the sheer turnover of both population and, to a lesser extent, businesses since 2008, when the Future Melbourne Plan was adopted, it's actually the case that we're looking at possibly upwards of 40 or more percent of people who would have no familiarity with this process whatsoever. We're an incredibly fast-changing city, and bringing new residents into these very high-level conversations about the future we want our city to look like is very important. So whilst I'm always nervous about the sheer number of consultation exercises we're undertaking with the community at any one given time, I think that this is an important project and one that I look forward to in 2016.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. Any other speakers? I'll just briefly say that this is the first time our new CEO has put his hand out for some cash. He's asking for an additional $350,000 to be added to the budget as a late item, and I think it's very worthy of support. I think it's important, and it is a relevant fact, that when you have a new leader of an organisation, obviously you look at all your capabilities and your structures, and the long-term Future Melbourne Plan is an important long-term strategic planning document for us, and I think it's great for the new CEO to have ownership of it, so I think it makes sense to move on this planning at this point in time, and hence very happy to provide an extra $350,000 in the budget to bring forward, if you like, and have a very detailed process right through the coming financial year, so it won't just be an issue which is left for the next council to fully determine, which might have been the case if you took a strict view on 10 years finishes in 2018. So I think it's an important decision to activate this now, and I look forward to participating and observing how the process goes forward. So would the mover like to include debate? We'll put that to the vote. All in favour? Declare that carried unanimously and pass it back to the Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. There are four items of general business to be considered. The first is proposed travel by Councillor Foster, participation in smoke-free forums in New Zealand, 21st to 24th of September. Do I call on the Councillor to move that motion, please? Thank you, Councillor Foster. Is there a seconder? Councillor Watts, thank you. Councillor Foster.
Just very briefly, Lord Mayor, this arises from an invitation from the Cancer Society New Zealand to address local municipalities over there, and stands as a great opportunity to promote Melbourne's fantastic work on promoting smoke-free initiatives here in our own city. I think it stands as a testament too to the fine work of officers Russell Webster, Linda and her team, and of course the Council for its ongoing endorsement in relation to these initiatives.
Thank you. Councillor Watts, is there a further speaker to the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Item 7.2 is post-travel report by Councillor Oak, to the ICLEI World Congress in Seoul, and I'm happy to move that motion. Seconded, Councillor Wood. First, just let me say very briefly, we should commend and be very proud of the work that Councillor Oak does at the ICLEI World Congresses. I've actually seen her in action at one in Copenhagen in 2009, and I'm both delighted and ashamed to say she worked much harder than I did. She represents us and ICLEI extremely well on the world stage. Councillors might not know that Councillor Oak has actually just been appointed President of the Board of the ICLEI World Secretariat. So her work has been well recognised by ICLEI as well. The work that she did in Seoul was outlined in 6.1 to 6.3. And importantly, what Councillor Oak did then was particularly to present Council's award-winning urban forest strategy. And as I was saying before, projects that are scalable, that are transferable, that are affordable, that are measurable, are of immense interest to other cities. And our urban forest strategy is certainly one of those. I'm delighted that we have Councillor Cathy Oak, who represents us so ably at ICLEI. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I agree wholeheartedly with you. Her work rate is quite unbelievable. Obviously, the issues you've highlighted are key not only to Melbourne but to our global reputation. And I think heading in towards the Paris summit, her appointment is very, very timely and gives us another great voice in this important debate.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to debate? In that case, I'll put the motion of those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. Item 7.3 is proposed travel by Councillor Foster to Washington, D.C. and New York. Could I call on the Council to move that motion? Councillor Foster, I'm happy to second that motion. Councillor Foster.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Again, just very briefly, this trip actually arises from my real life and is funded accordingly. It's a series of speaking opportunities for Monash University, but it's a great opportunity as well to consult with some experts in DC and in New York in relation to matters that may or will no doubt affect us here in Melbourne, principally city safety and other urban design initiatives that are occurring in both those cities, I'm sure would be of great interest to us, and I look forward to reporting on both of those and extend my thanks to the Lord Mayor for his support in making some connections in DC.
Thank you, Council. I'm happy to second this. Those magic words in a travel report, no cost to Council. It's a delight to see. I've actually suggested to Councillor Foster one of the things that we've been able to do is to develop good relationships with New York and Washington. I was fortunate to meet and was very impressed by the Chief of Police in Washington DC, Kathy Lanier. And I've offered, we can't guarantee anything, but I've certainly offered to write to Bill Bratton and to in New York and Kathy Lanier in Washington to ask them to extend briefings at a very high level to Councillor Foster. I'm very interested in what Councillor Foster will bring back there, because I think when he takes over what we do in full spectrum policing, there'll be some things that we do that are quite innovative and of interest to them, but it'd be fascinating to know if we're not doing anything, and that's one of the reasons I'm delighted to support these sorts of exchanges around such an important issue as city safety. Is there a further speaker to debate? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Agenda item 7.4 is notice of motion from Councillor Mayne from the Australian Local Government Association National General Assembly. Could I call on Councillor Mayne to move that motion?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I'd like to move an alternative motion, which will now be displayed on the screen, which has been circulated to councillors.
Thank you. Is there a seconder for that motion, Councillor Leppert? Thank you. Councillor Mayne.
Yes, thanks, Lord Mayor. We haven't really done this sort of thing before, where we agree to participate in peak local government association forums and provide some public advice and public council credibility to how we'll vote when we get there. So at the MAV recently, we gave a fairly fulsome rundown of fors and againsts. In this instance with ALGA, I think we'll probably be the only council attending ALGA which will be doing this in public, but we're identifying six motions that we will be objecting to for various reasons, and we don't believe that the federal government should cut our grant funding to zero, as one motion suggests, and a whole range of other not particularly earth-shattering motions, but we've identified six of the 80 that we'll be opposing. We haven't proposed this time saying there'll be general agreement on all other motions. In fact, we've actually included a slight criticism of the motions. If you look up there in point five, that we note that there's a general concern that there's so many motions are simply asking for money. And if you read through the 80 motions, it is a shopping list of give us more money for this and give us more money for that. And it becomes a bit repetitive, to be quite frank, after a while. And it was doubly disappointing when our motion, which was very much different, but was a seven-point good governance motion identifying good practice such as disclosing executive pay or public questions or audio of council meetings or releasing your lease register. So general good governance in good transparency practice, that we ask our peak body to perhaps endorse this as a sector, and ALGA puts it stone motherless last at 80 out of 80 motions. And then if you look at the quality of what precedes it, you can understand the level of frustration that you might be detecting in my voice this evening. So that's why we are where we are with what's on the screen. We're not supporting six. Councillor Ong and myself will go along and listen to everything else on its merits, but we haven't identified any specific concerns about any of the other 73 motions. I dare say we'll be supporting our own if we get to it after 3 days. And we're sending a bit of a message to ALGA about whether they could try and encourage the agenda to deal with issues we can perhaps influence rather than just always asking for money, and maybe, you know, broaden out the discussion points and not put things that aren't asking for money right down the bottom of the list, and maybe focus on, you know, our own sector's governance and operations and best practice and things like that. So I think it's good that we're making this position public. Not sure we're going to be the most popular crew when we get up there, but we'll endeavour to lead by...
You're not going to lose any ground.
No, that's right. So that's correct. But we do try to lead by example, and talking about governance is not something that happens too often in local government peak body forums, and telling people their motions don't have much credibility also is pretty rare. So we'll see how we go next week. And I thank very much Councillor Ong for coming, and officers for supporting in the analysis of the motions.
With the second, I'd like to support that eloquent.
Yes, I could hear Councillor Mayne's heartbreaking from here. I think he's done a very good job going through these and setting up the framework for himself and Councillor Ong to make decisions on our behalf up in ALGA. So I wish him well. I wish them both well. And I thank officers for their help as well. Councillor Mayne's quite right when he points out that the 79 motions that precede ours are not generally of very high quality, and I thank him for including objections to some of the motions that I found particularly galling, including those calling on further reductions in the foreign aid budget to fund local government disaster relief and the reduction of the renewable energy target, among others. There are also about 40 or so which are worded so poorly that if I was a delegate, I'd just be voting against them all as a matter of course. So lucky it's not me, it's you two. I wish you well.
Is there a further contributor to debate? Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I look forward to accompanying Councillor Mayne to this first time up to ALGA in a 6.5 year period. Councillor Mayne and I discussed this particular phenomenon that we ended up 80 out of 80, and that we should make a bit of a noise. They said the largest capital cities of the countries, their council should actually have some sort of a higher priority. So we won't claim to be the biggest, so we try to push Sydney up to the first. And whether we do it publicly or we do it through a bit of lobbying, is that in the future, I think that at least the capital city council should deserve some sort of priority rather than just the ones who make the most noise get shoved down to the bottom of the list. So I look forward to this.
Is there further speaker to debate? In that case, I will put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. This concludes the items of general business for consideration. Are there any items proposed urgent business? Yes, Councillor Mayne, would you care to move a motion?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I move the motion on the screen and propose it as an item of urgent business.
I'm happy to second that. Is there any debate needed on that? In that case, I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Councillor Mayne, could you put the motion, please?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. The motion appears on the screen. I'm happy to move that.
Thank you. Is there a seconder for that motion? I'm happy to second. Councillor Mayne, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, the reason that this motion is urgent is that the state government only released 157 pages of legislation relating to the proposed circa $6 billion sale of the Port of Melbourne or lease of the Port of Melbourne. And we've had some preliminary assessment by our officers with some supporting legal advice, and we had some internal discussions and felt that that calling for a report in 2 weeks' time to come back to the June council meeting would give our officers enough time to go through some very complex legislation and to give us some advice as to whether there are any implications for the City of Melbourne that we should consider that come up with both the legislation and the proposed sale. So the motion identifies things such as ownership of open space, boundary issues, future property-based tax revenue, issues in terms of recreational fishing or access to waterways. There's a whole myriad, a whole range of potential issues which may arise, and this motion simply seeks our officers to have a good look at the issues and come back to us and give us some advice on how we should engage with the state government whilst this legislation is still in the House. So whether we should seek some amendments or whether we should just write to the Premier or how we engage. But I did notice that a couple of the motions in ALGA were councils complaining about the treatment of them by airports on Commonwealth government-owned land. So in other words, when airports were privatised or long-term leases, they didn't reach long-term agreements with the council about rates, and now there's disputes going on at multiple councils which are coming up in ALGA. So these are the sort of issues where you need to deal with it all up front when the government is assessing legislation and the long-term regulatory framework for a soon-to-be-privatised business. That's when it's best to put these situations in place to make any changes, to realign boundaries, to lock in long-term rating practices. So this report will come back with support from outside legal advice and simply give us some advice on how we engage with the state. And I think as Port of Melbourne is primarily, almost totally within the City of Melbourne, it's a huge operation that we never really deal with much because it's so sort of almost Vatican-like in the way it's been set up, where it's got its own planning regime and its own regulatory regime, and we really don't have much to do with the port its own Pope Birrell. We need to really get into the detail of this and work out how we will coexist with a privately operated port into the future.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. This is a very big question. How will the sale of the Port of Melbourne affect us? And the answer is we don't know, and we should. And so it's a very useful piece of work. I don't know. It's been a long time since I was in the Parliament. When I was there, there was a Scrutiny of Acts and Regulations Committee, which did take public submission, and they do look at the impact of legislation and are able to feed into the parliamentary process. Whatever its successor in process is, we should be looking to engage with them as well, because that's another area where these questions can be raised and where the minister responsible has to provide answers. But it is a very reasonable thing to do, and I think a very prudent thing to do, given the possible impacts of the sale of the port on the City of Melbourne. And I thank Councillor Mayne for bringing it to us. Is there a further speaker to debate? In that case, I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any further items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide a 15-minute period for people to ask us questions. Are there any questions for us? In that case, I thank members of the public. Sorry, there was? Want to ask a question? Oh, no, he wouldn't do that. In that case, can I thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 6:48 p.m.